Hello, this is Joe McGee. You know, we've been doing seminars across the country for years. Seminars on marriage, parenting, men, money, and family. We want to encourage you to email us and let us know if this podcast has helped you. Or maybe you have joined us live at one of our seminars. If you have a testimony, you just want to tell us what God's doing in your life, please email us at mail@joemcgeeministries.com, or you can contact us through our website, joemcgeeministries.com. There you will find helpful articles and tools to help you grow in God, your marriage, and your family. We love you guys, and we hope you enjoy the podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mailbag Monday. Angel and I are here to answer some great questions today.
Yes, so let's go ahead and just jump right in.
Yes.
The first one is, I would like my kids to talk to me more instead of just my wife. I don't want to tell them that because then they would probably do it out of obligation. I want to think I've always been approachable, so I'm not sure what I could have done differently. Did God just make moms to be the sounding board?
The greatest way to get your kids to talk to you is to eat something. Order a pizza, go out to a restaurant. When food hits your belly, your brain doesn't work as well because blood runs to your belly. So I used to keep two big fire pits in my yard to live out in the country. So I remember if I went out and just start a fire in the yard, you know, kind of in the fire pit. And the kids come out, "What are you doing, Dad?" "I'm just building a fire." "What are you going to do?" "I don't know. I just like building a fire." And so I just sit on a log. We kept those big old logs around that fireplace. And I just sit down. I said, "Were you cooking something?" "I hadn't thought about it." "Well, can we get some marshmallows?" "Sure, bring them out." And they'd bring out marshmallows or hot dogs. And if you sit there, if you just sit real quiet, kids will tell you stuff they wouldn't normally tell you. If you say to your child, "Hey, sit down. We need to talk." You're not going to get a thing. You might as well pull a nail out of an oak board. They're not going to tell you a thing. Oh, they're looking for something. And you got to be real unassuming, real unoffensive. And when they tell you something, you can't overreact. You got to learn how to just be calm. So the biggest thing is church grows four ways: prayer, doctrine, breaking bread, and fellowship. It's just as holy to go eat dinner or lunch or breakfast with somebody. It is to pray all night and study the Bible. So if you get your kids to talk, food is a common denominator. It might just be a marshmallow over a fire or a hot dog. It might just be going out, "Hey, let's go get a pizza." And if you sit there and be quiet, don't do all the talking, eventually they sit there and say, "Hey, Dad, can I ask you a question?" "Sure." And then they'll ask you something. "Hey, Mom, did you hear about this? Hey, did you hear what happened to school today?" "No." And whenever you hear something, again, please do not overreact. The first time you do, that's the last time they're going to open up to you. So, Angie, you bet better at this even than I've been.
Well, I mean, I think boys and girls are very different. You know, my daughter, oh, man, she's a... And my son, I saw a study one time where a guy talked about communicating with boys and how different it was that you needed to do something with them, like fish or play golf or something. Yes. Like that. They said ask them very specific questions. And I remember my son was probably in the second grade, and so I thought, I'm going to try this. So every day he would get in the car after school, and I'd say, "Tell me the funniest thing that happened today." And this went on for like a couple weeks, and he'd say, "Nothing funny happened today." And I said, "Well, tell me the saddest thing that happened." "Well, nothing sad happened, you know." So I was getting that as every answer. And then one day, about a week and a half into it, he runs over to the car, rips the door open, goes, "I can tell you the grossest thing that happened." I said, What was it?" And he said, "So-and-so threw up all over." And I was like, okay. But I realized that, you know, if I continued to go down that road with him, mm-hmm. it would pull stuff out of him more. And I did. I'd have to play a game with him,
yes.
you know, and then he would open up to me. But when your kids get older, teenagers, I think a lot of parents are afraid of teenagers and afraid to hit the taboo subjects, you know. If I don't know, then, you know, that's probably better. Not true.
No,
they need somebody to talk to.
Yes, they do.
So I usually just, I'd go for very specific questions. To this day, I love teenagers and college age. And but it's because I've worked with them for so many years. But I would say, like you said, eating. But if you have a son, I'd say do stuff with him.
Yep, do something.
Get him to open up. But what you said was critical. To not react, because there's times that my kids have said stuff and it's taken everything inside my body not to let my face. You know,
I want to slap something. I want to throw something.
What? No, yeah, don't reflect what I'm feeling inside. And I just have to tell you, whoa, let me take a minute, because it can trigger you emotionally.
Yeah.
And like you said, it will definitely, you know, stop them. So what you want to do is develop a safe place for them to honestly communicate.
Yes.
And there's times I've had to say, you know what, I got to think about this. I'm not really sure. I'm going to have to dig a little bit. So,
you know, the Bible says be slow to speak and quick to hear. Don't just, if whatever you think you're going to say, just sit on it for about 30 seconds. Don't let it come out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Just sit real calm.
It also says even the fool looks wise if he can control his tongue.
Yeah, control the tongue.
So, you know, I mean, I think I wasn't as good at that when I was in my 20s. Now that I'm in my 50s, I'm much better at it. But, you know, I think I have great communication with my kids, and we certainly do not always agree. They're adult children now, but you know, they at least know that they can. I'm safe that they can say what they want to.
Well, if you go through just Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus always answered a question with a question.
Mm-hmm.
He never answered unless he came back with another question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about this? And so, I didn't think about that. And so, not making comments, well, I'll tell you what I think. Well, let me tell you what I think. I don't want you to know what I think.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about that? How do you think that's going to work out?
Yeah.
Is that working out good for them? Well, no. Well, why do you think it's not? Well, I think it's kind of stupid, Dad. Well, probably is. So they'll answer their own questions most of the time.
And you just kind of have to say, let's play. I always say to my kids, let's play this scenario out.
Yeah.
And see what's the best place and the worst place it can take us.
Yeah.
So,
Great question.
I mean, I would just really, and I really encourage you, because I can tell you, as much as you want to talk to them, they want to talk to you more.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Okay, this one is on marriage. Whenever my husband and I are around his mom, bad start to a question. I'm kidding. Whenever my husband and I are around his mom, it seems she's always trying to best me in front of him. I realize this says more about her than me, but I can feel it building up to something. The worst part is that my husband blows it off as her being silly.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you're looking for in that question, but the Bible talks about deferring to one another. So don't ever get in a, you know, in a crossfire thing with in-laws. And I've got great teachings about in-laws. You know, I told people I love my in-laws as much as I love my own parents, and I do today, you know. And your mother's a great lady, and she's an opinionated lady, and she's whatever you say, she's got an opinion about it. But I really like her.
Why does she?
I know, but I like her, and I laugh with her all the time. And I think it kind of surprised her. It's like, hey, man, I like being around you. And you probably irritate most of the people around you, but not me. I really like you because I love your daughter. And so you just have to not get in a battle of trying to top them or tell the biggest story or the biggest lie or the, well, I did this. And I went, they don't care. You're trying to love everybody. So just go along with them and just keep your mouth shut and just smile a lot. And on your private one-on-one with your spouse, you can tell them, well, it really upsets me when she says that. You tell him what you think. Now, you got to watch out because most spouses do not have the rule down pat. Your spouse is the number one person in your life outside God. You don't ever share anything about you and your spouse or your conversations with another individual. There's conversations that are just between you and them alone.
Mm-hmm.
You don't share with guys at work or ladies around the water fountain. You better not be sharing anything that's personal and intimate about you and your spouse with another individual, especially their parents or your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted my parents to know that, hey, I married the greatest person in the world. And there's nothing negative you're ever going to hear come out of my mouth, and never did. And so we both kind of went through that same thing. Like, if there's something negative, no, you're great. I love my parents. I love my in-laws, and I love my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You want anything else outside my family come out of my mouth. Now, one-on-one, we've been real honest with one another. Hey, sugar, we need to talk. That kind of offended me, you know. Kind of watched that, you know. And so just set some standards.
Well, in my first marriage, I had, did I have some in-laws?
Yep. Here comes the bumper sticker.
Yeah, and I did not handle it very well. I remember my father-in-law was what I call a barker. and he was used to getting his way.
Mm-hmm.
And he bullying people. And what? We lived in a house that he owned, and I kicked him out of that house.
Not good.
No, it wasn't good. That did not end well. That didn't go in my favor. And then his parents were divorced, and so my mother-in-law was, we all referred to her as a country clubber. And so she would tell you how to eat and which fork to use. But more than anything, when I had children, she would tell me how to discipline them.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting because she sent her children to boarding school. So it was like, so, but I didn't, truthfully, I didn't see her that much.
Yes.
And I would, I mean, especially my father-in-law in those early years, when he would come to visit 2 weeks before there, I'd start getting grouchy, building it up in my mind how bad this visit is going to be. And it never was. It never was. You know, it was always bigger in my mind and everything yeah. else. But, and it does say more about her if that's the case. But I get it. I get it. We're human. It's not that it doesn't trigger you. But I always say those people are in my life to develop the fruit of the Spirit.
They're a gift from God.
Yeah.
They are a gift from God.
And you know, as a long suffering, that is a fruit of the Spirit. It is. It can be a challenge. And it is a challenge when your spouse kind of just poo-poos it off. And so I just think... you need to sit down and have a heart-to-heart with your spouse first and foremost.
Yes, you do.
And say, look, I know I'm not going to change your mother.
Yeah.
She's going to probably be like that till Jesus comes. Yeah. If, you know, if I have a root canal, she's going to have one that hurt twice as bad. And but say you were raising that. That may be something that you're used to, but I'm not. I'm coming in from a different vantage point, and I want to have a good relationship.
Yes.
So you're going to have to help me with this.
Yes.
Because he's going to have authority to say things that you'll never be able to say.
Nope.
So that would be the approach that I would try to take.
Well, I used to always tell couples, you know, Jesus tarries, eventually you're going to your in-law's funeral. And you're going to stand there over a grave and watch them buried. And you're going to realize, I can't not take anything back. I can't go back and unsay anything I said. Mm-hmm. And so let your words be slow to speak, quick to hear, slow to wrath, soft to answer, turns away wrath. You better get the Proverbs in your ready deep, what you can and cannot say with your mouth.
That is true. And my former father-in-law did pass away. And about 8 years before he passed, I started really working on it. We ended on a very high note.
Very good.
Had a great relationship.
Very good.
And so, yeah, you don't want regrets.
And for both sides of the party, for those who are listening, the Bible still says you need to leave your father and mother and mm-hmm. cleave unto your spouse. So there shouldn't be a lot of hanging out time with the in-laws or your parents. You're supposed to get your own life. Now, I love parenting, and I've taught on parenting for years, but the goal in parenting was to get my kids out of the house. And I did it very positive. All my kids went to private school, private college, paid for the weddings, paid for the honeymoon, bought their first cars. I'm like Santa Claus stuck upside down in your chimney. But the goal is to let you become an adult. The goal is for you to go become an adult and get your own life, have your own kids, you know, get your own job, make your own money. That's the goal. It wasn't a bad thing. It was a good thing. But some families in the country, they make a God out of family. Family's not God. God's God. Things change all the time. So you're supposed to go be it. And I love having a relationship with my in-laws and my parents, but we lived 4 or 5 states away most of the time. We didn't see them maybe twice a year. Had a good time when we did, but we didn't live next door. And so you have to be very careful about just not camping out right next to one another.
That's true. And, you know, when I was a single parent for all those years, 12 years, when my kids were getting out of college and all, I had a very good friend. And a good friend is someone that tells you the truth.
Yes,
she said to me, she said, you know what? You have made your children an idol. And she said, you need to move on with your life. And that was hard to take.
Sure.
And but I appreciated it. She was right. She was right. And I mean, I needed to let them go. And so, yeah, you're right. Although I would like to be around my kids every day.
I know. The mother's always there.
If they had a grandchild, I would really like to be around them every day. But,
I hope they're listening.
But but the reality of it is it's not healthy.
Yes, it's not.
So, all right. So here's another one on marriage. It says, I've always been the peacemaker in our marriage and have often said I'm sorry just to stop arguments. But now that we've been married for a while, I've started speaking my mind more. Now my husband thinks I'm not the same person he married because I push back.
That's the challenge for everybody that's ever been married. There's the growth process. I tell people all the time, when you get married, take pictures, take a lot of photos. You know, have a professional photographer take photos of the wedding because it's going to change on day 2. You're not going to stay the same. You're going to grow in the grace and knowledge of the Lord Jesus. You're going to mature. Hopefully you're going to mature. You're going to grow. You're going to have a different opinion. You know, you're going to have a different opinion after the first year, after the fifth year. It's like, well, I didn't think you liked that. Well, I do. I thought you didn't like that. Well, I do now. Well, I thought you always liked this. Well, I don't like that anymore. You change. Yeah. Humans change what they like, what they think, what they want to wear, the food they eat. I thought you always liked steak. Well, I'm tired of steak. I want to eat something different now. And so you realize that the human is evolving. We're always growing. We're always changing. And so I remember it was so funny when my first wife passed away and people said, well, you need to start dating again. I said, I didn't date the first time. I just saw something I liked and I went after it. I don't believe in it. It's really the dating process. Well, I liked them. I didn't like them. I liked the way they talked. I liked the way they kissed. I liked the way they said this. I don't like the way they did it. And so I don't care what you pick. I don't care how you narrow it down. Hey, I've picked somebody good. Well, let me tell you a secret. They're going to change. They're going to change. So what you look for, somebody told me one time in a seminar we were doing in Louisiana, Michigan, we two people had lost spouses, you know, long lived, they'd passed away, and they wanted to get remarried. And so when we get remarried, we want to find this time, we're added to the list, a good, you know, relationship, funny, fun to be with, whatever, healthy, they don't believe in God. We want to find somebody that fears God more than we do. It was a new list of what? Yeah, we want to marry somebody that fears God more than we do. We married two great men, but we had to drag them to church all the time. They loved us, took care of our family, paid the bills, loving people, but they just weren't much on God. But if we get married again, the one thing we're going to ask, I want to marry somebody that loves God more than me. I want you chasing God faster than I am. And it doesn't, it's just like, it was just a new thought because they didn't have that thought the first time they got married. They got what they wanted, but life changes. And eventually through life, you want to find somebody that really loves and fears God. That's what you want. So it changes. It's going to change. So just hang with it.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, just in the natural, okay, so we know when we have an infant that they're going to grow out of that infant stage into the ones and twos, a toddler time, and then they're going to get into the puberty time, and then they're going to become a teenager, and then they're going to become an adult. But for some reason, when you get married, you don't see that growing process as a human being.
It continues.
It continues on into adulthood. Because yes. I am certainly not the same person I was when I was 20.
Nope. Oh, mercy.
And I'm not the same person I was when I was 30 or 40.
Nope.
Because life changes you.
Yes, it does.
If God and the Holy Spirit are doing their job, you are growing and becoming a better person.
Yes.
And as you allow them to have a say in your life and in your heart. And I think a really good, your book on You Don't Find a Good Marriage, You Build One, is a great tool.
Yes.
on allowing that growth to occur in your spouse.
You got to keep your tool patch on for the rest of your life because it's going to constantly evolve. You're going to you're going to build probably a bigger house. You got to get a better car. Your clothes going to wear out. You got to get new clothes. My hair's going to change. I'm trying to keep it on my head. If it does, I'm trying to keep it combed right. You change, and that's just the adventure of life. God designed it that way. So
Yeah. Please
don't settle because you're going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, my dad said about his hair, you can turn gray, just don't turn loose. So anyway, so that's a good question. I just love these Mailbag Mondays.
I know, they're great.
I think the great part of it is that I get to hear your heart.
Yes.
You get to hear mine. And,
yes.
And we say, oh, yeah, we are very different.
And people say, you know, what's funny about you and H, when you talk, especially our marriage seminars, you don't seem to agree on about half the stuff. Well, we don't. We see it different. When God looked at Adam in the Bible in Genesis, he thought everything was good on the first six days of creation. The first time God said, not good, he was looking at a man. He told him, not good. He said, what's not good? You're alone. That's not good. I got to make you a helper. Now, the first half of that word is hell. You got to get the whole word, helper. Helper, I'm going to make a woman. It's not.
I don't like that analogy, just so you know.
He made Eve. Eve was twice as smart. She's got three times the vocabulary.
Not good. Not good.
Yeah. And so when God made Adam, he made a woman. He made something different. He made something better. He said, I love my man so much, I'll make something that's better than him, that's going to help him.
Yes.
And so that's why the wife's called a helper. She's great, man. She can do things you can't do. She thinks things you don't think. The goal in life is not to dominate your wife. It's to honor the gift that God gave you, man. Outside of Jesus, a wife is the second greatest thing God ever made for a man. And so you need to honor that gift, man.
That is the truth.
Woo, have mercy.
And I'll try not to remind you every day about that.
you probably will.
No, we really appreciate you guys becoming part of our family and yes. listening to this podcast. If you do have any questions, please direct them to mail@joemcgeeministries.com.
Yes.
We will certainly get to it. And thanks for sharing your Monday with us. And
Thank you, guys.
We look forward to seeing you next Monday.
We love you. Hey, thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear more of what God can do in your life. He's got a great future for you and your family, and we are here to help you get there. Make sure and go to our website, joemcgeeministries.com. We've got all sorts of materials, books, DVDs, you name it, all there to help you, your marriage, and your family succeed.